Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on a request by 20 defectors from North Korea that Switzerland immediately block all assets belonging to their former country's leaders. Then we report on how South Korea is dealing with the increasing amounts of waste from electronic devices. And we will tell you how you can get a copy of the VOA 2015 wall calendar mailed to you free. North Korean defectors seek an asset freeze, and South Koreans deal with old devices that may be leaking toxic or poisonous chemicals into the ground. Those are our stories today on As It Is from VOA. Twenty North Korean defectors urged Switzerland to block all assets of the North Korean leadership immediately. The 20 have fled North Korea. They said the country's leaders are directly responsible for human rights crimes against their own people. Mario Ritter reports.
The group wrote an open letter to Swiss President Didier Burkhalter. In it, they argued that freezing assets could help reduce human rights violations that have been happening in North Korea for many years. Mr. Burkhalter said he understood why the group was angry at the country's leaders. But he said he could not freeze North Korean assets without orders from the UN Security Council. An Myung Chol is a well-known North Korean defector. Mr. An said he was not happy about President Burkhalter's response. Mr. An served as a prison camp guard in North Korea from 1987 to 1994. He says that, as a result, he knows how badly political prisoners are treated in that country. Mr. An now leads a non-profit organization called NK Watch. It aims to help end North Korean human rights violations. The organization is based in Seoul, South Korea. Mr. An said no one knows how much money North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and other top North Korean officials have in Swiss bank accounts. But, he said, many people claim that North Korean assets could be as high as $4 billion. And, Mr. An said, the money came from illegal or oppressive activities. He spoke through an interpreter. Mr. An spoke to the UN last year about the human rights situation in North Korea. He said it was very important to send North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to the International Criminal Court for trial. Mr. An said putting Mr. Kim on trial would send a strong message to the people in North Korea that their leader is a criminal. The UN General Assembly is expected to vote Tuesday whether to advise the ICC to consider the case of North Korea. The UN has already warned Mr. Kim to improve oppressive conditions in his country. If he does not, the group said he could face justice for past and present crimes. Some reports have said the human rights situation has improved since North Korea released some American prisoners. But Mr. An said the country is only using the issue to improve its image.
South Korea is dealing with increasing amounts of waste from electronic devices. These useless or unwanted parts are called e-waste. Tons of old computers, telephones, and other devices are taken to landfills. The old products may leak toxic or poisonous chemicals. Now, as Jonathan Evans reports, some local governments in South Korea are launching special e-waste recycling programs.
The city of Seoul throws out about 10 tons of e-waste each year. About 20% of that goes to the Seoul Resource Center, also known as the SR Center. There, electronic devices are taken apart so that valuable metals, like gold or copper, can be extracted and reused. South Korean officials say metal extraction is a $3.8 billion industry. Ji Eun-gung is the chief executive officer of the SR Center. He says reusing electronic parts is not only about earning profits. He says the goal is to protect the environment. He says our planet has a limited amount of natural resources. Our company contributes to a sustainable society by conserving these materials. Ji Eun-gun says about 90% of what is brought to the center will be used on other products. The increase of e-waste is not only a concern in South Korea. The United Nations says millions of tons of e-waste end up in developing countries. Toxic materials like lead and mercury can create a severe health risk to the local population. The Seoul city government partnered with the SR Center to collect e-waste in 2009. Lee Tae-hung lives in the South Korean capital. He says recycling is also about protecting personal information from attack. He says if devices like phones are not recycled, then they could illegally end up in other countries like China or in Southeast Asia, and personal data could be stolen. But some environmental groups say not enough is being done to limit the amount of electronics sent to landfills. South Koreans keep buying more and more electronic gadgets. Some experts estimate that only 21% of the country's total e-waste gets properly recycled. Lee Joo-hong is with the Green Consumers Network. He says the average South Korean buys a new mobile phone every 18 months. He says companies offer special deals to buy new products. He says people change their phones so quickly, partially because companies offer big subsidies to buy new products. And Korean consumers do not want to feel left out by not having the latest model.
Recently, we received our supply of VOA wall calendars for 2015. To get your calendar, simply send an email to us at learningenglish.com. at voanews.com. Be sure to include your mailing address when you write, and tell us what radio station you are listening to and the time of the broadcast. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Climate change has caused a rise in sea levels. This has increased the amount of salt in fresh water used on coastal farms. As a result, farmers are increasingly unable to use fields close to the sea. Scientists call this process salinization. The term comes from the word saline, which means a mixture of salt and water. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says salinization is reducing the world's irrigated lands by 1 to 2% every year. Irrigation is the process of supplying land with fresh water from other areas. But a farmer in the Netherlands is now using a mixture of sea and fresh water to grow healthy and tasty vegetables. Mark van Rieselberg started with an experiment. He put several kinds of plants in saline.
We put in a lot of plants in the field, and then we put them in fresh water and in seawater and all the varieties between it, and then we see which variety is surviving and which variety is dying.
Mr. van Rieselberg worked on the project with scientists from the Free University of Amsterdam. He divided a farm into 8 irrigated areas. Separate pipes pumped fresh and seawater, and a computer program created water with 8 levels of salinity.
And then the computer says, go, and then it goes to the fields and the dripping irrigation starts to work, and we're going to kill plants. That's it.
Computerized measuring devices called sensors controlled the water levels and the levels of salinity. Mr. van Rieselberg says he was able to harvest vegetables from most of the 8 test areas. He says the vegetables were smaller than those grown in freshwater, but he says they also have more sugar and salt, so they taste better.
It's a miracle. I mean, it shouldn't be a carrot. It should be dying. If we look at the data that are available in the world at the moment.
The farmer grew carrots, cabbage, onions, and beetroot. But he found that potatoes grew better than the other vegetables in the combination of sea and freshwater. Mr. van Rieselberg says 4 kinds of these potatoes were recently sent to Pakistan, where thousands of hectares of land have been damaged by salinization. Farmers in Pakistan will test the Dutch potatoes to see if they can be grown in those fields. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. For more agriculture and environment stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, This is Science in the News. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. This week, we tell about Everglades National Park in the American state of Florida.
When many people think of Florida, images of sandy coastlines or fun theme park rides come to mind. Yet, about an hour south of Miami lies a natural wilderness different from anywhere else in the United States. Everglades National Park is the largest subtropical wilderness in the country. The park is home to several rare and endangered species. It is also the third largest national park in the lower 48 states, after Death Valley and Yellowstone. Each year, more than 1 million people visit the Everglades.
In 1947, President Harry Truman spoke at the official opening of the Everglades National Park. He said the goal of creating the park was to protect forever a wild area that could never be replaced. The Everglades is considered one of the great biological wonders of the world. The expansive wetlands stretch across more than 600,000 hectares. It is a place where plants and animals from the Caribbean Sea share an ecosystem with native North American species. 9 different environments exist within the Everglades. They include mangrove and cypress swamps, estuaries, and coastal marshes.
In the 1940s, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas wrote a book called The Everglades, River of Grass. She described the area as the liquid heart of Florida. Unlike most other national parks, Everglades National Park was created to protect an ecosystem from damage. The Everglades is home to about 15 species that federal officials say are threatened and endangered. They include the Florida panther, the American crocodile, and the West Indian manatee. In addition, more than 350 bird species and 300 species of fresh and saltwater fish live within the park. The Everglades is also home to 40 species of mammals and 50 reptile species.
Visitors to the Everglades will see many exotic plants. They include what is said to be the largest growth of mangrove trees in the Western world. Gumbo limbo trees, known for their peeling red skin. Strangler figs and royal palms are also among the area's plant life. The country's largest living mahogany tree also lives in the Everglades. Sawgrass grows in some areas of the park. Be careful. Sawgrass is very sharp, with teeth just like a saw. It can grow up to 4 meters tall. With about 1.5 meters of rainfall each year, plants and trees never stop growing in the Everglades.
The dry winter season is the favorite of most visitors, when insects like mosquitoes are less of a problem. The rainy season lasts from June to November. There are many ways to explore the Everglades. Visitors can see alligators while hiking the Anhinga Trail. The Everglades is one of the only places on Earth where freshwater alligators and saltwater crocodiles live in the same area. Visitors using canoes or airboats are likely to see large groups of wading birds, like the wood stork or the great blue heron. It is even possible to see flamingos in the Everglades. Some visitors might enjoy riding bicycles through Shark Valley. Others may want to move slowly through shallow waters where they can see insects and wildlife up close. Park guides also lead visitors on tram rides.
Experts say changes to the Everglades are threatening several different kinds of wildlife. They say the threats are a result of actions the United States government began more than 50 years ago, and settlers began even earlier. The National Park Service says that early colonial settlers and land developers believed the Everglades had little value. The settlers had plans to remove water from the area. In the 1880s, developers began digging canals to reduce water levels. At the time, they did not understand the complexity of the Everglades ecosystem. As a result, they were not prepared for all the work and caused environmental problems. The ecosystem, however, was able to survive.
Even larger efforts to drain the wetlands continued between 1905 and 1910. Farms were built on large pieces of land. This led to increased development, with more people moving to the Everglades and also more visitors. More changes came in 1948. At that time, Congress approved the Central and South Florida Project. As part of the plan, the Army Corps of Engineers built roads, canals, and water control systems throughout South Florida. The project was aimed at providing water and flood protection for developed areas and agriculture. Workers built a huge system of waterways and pumping stations to control the overflow of Lake Okeechobee, north of the Everglades.
Today, some of South Florida's early wetland areas no longer exist. Populations of wading birds have been reduced by 90%. Whole populations of animals are in danger of disappearing. The endangered creatures include the manatee, the Miami blackhead snake, the wood stork, and the Florida panther. In recent years, environmental experts have learned about the damage to the Everglades. Some experts say the balance of nature there has been destroyed.
Years ago, Congress approved a plan to restore and improve the Everglades. Federal, state, and other organizations are partners in the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan. Thomas Van Lent is a scientist with the Everglades Foundation, a not-for-profit group. He says the restoration efforts are moving forward. For example, many roads have been removed. Early in 2010, ground was broken on the Picayune Strand Restoration Project. The goal of the project is to re-establish natural water flow across more than 22,000 hectares of wetland. Workers removed water from that area in the early 1960s. At the time, the goal was to develop the land for homes. However, the development failed, and healthy wetlands were harmed.
Project organizers hope to recreate wetlands in Picayune Strand and nearby lands by redirecting the flow of water in that area. At the same time, they are seeking to reestablish natural water flow to the 10,000 Islands National Wildlife Refuge. Project officials are working to improve the size and ecosystems of nearby lands. The area includes the Collier Seminole State Park and the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge. If the goals are met, the project should help threatened and endangered animals.
For example, the population of one big cat has been falling in recent years. Panthers once existed in much greater numbers, but too much hunting, loss of panther homelands, and vehicle strikes have reduced their population. Wildlife experts are working to increase the number of panthers and other animals at risk. Scientists also want to remove Burmese pythons from the Everglades. Pythons have no natural enemies in the area. No one knows how many of these huge snakes live in and around the Everglades. Burmese pythons are native to Southeast Asia. Python owners apparently left their unwanted snakes in the Everglades years ago.
Scientist Thomas Van Lent says pythons have been found along the sides of roads, as if thrown there from vehicles. Some of the creatures are big enough to eat bobcats and small deer. Mr. Van Lent says it is very difficult to find pythons in the Everglades, and hunting them has not proved very effective. Other animals and people usually find the snakes when they step on them by accident, he adds. Other methods, like trapping, also have not solved the problem. The future of the wild, beautiful, and sometimes threatening Everglades is not clear. However, efforts to protect the area are continuing, so people from all over the world may continue visiting this biological treasure.
This Science in the News was written by Geraldyn Watson. Our producer was June Sims. With Shirley Griffith, I'm Faith Lapidus. Read and listen to our programs on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. And you can see videos about Everglades National Park and projects to protect and improve the park at www.evergladesplan.org. Join us again next week for more news about science on the Voice of America.